From sea to shining sea, America's favorite uncle, Bumpkin Bob.
Hey, y'all, this is Bumpkin Bob coming to you with Bumpkin Bob Show from beautiful Solemn Springs, Arkansas, here in the Ozark Mountains. Hey, this is Labor Day weekend, so this whole episode is going to be very labor intensive, I think is a good word. And we're going to get to the announcements here in a minute. We just got one really big announcement. But first thing I want to say is let's talk a little bit about Texas and Hurricane Harvey. I know we've all got family and friends down there that we're worried about. And I know in my heart that the people of coastal Texas will not let Harvey get to them. I mean, those people are tough as nails down there. But what we do want to remember is keep them in our prayers and thoughts. But as the water recedes, that's when the work starts. I heard the other day there's a lot of schools there in the Houston area. They're going to be closed. They're going to have to combine kids into, you know, the schools that are still going to be able to be operable. So, and then people's houses. I mean, my God, it's a lot of destruction down there. So let's keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Continue to give to the American Red Cross and other notable charitable or organizations, if you can find one that's legit. But, you know, I just want to say really from the bottom of my heart, you know, God bless Texas. I know y'all are going to come out of this. I mean, it's like a whole nother country. But y'all are tough as nails. We know that. But, you know, the rest of the country is going to pitch in and help where we can. A lot of people have already went down there with their flat bottom boats and their bass boats helping on rescue efforts. I know here in the state of Arkansas, they've sent National Guard down. They've sent Game Fish Commission officers and people from law enforcement and volunteer fire departments down there. So, you know, there's a lot of people going down there to help. But just remember, when the water recedes, that's when the work starts. So let's not forget about Texas just because the water went receded. You know, let's keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Give to the charitable organizations when we can. And again, it's just like if you got family and friends down there, keep checking on them. You know, if you can go down and help, go down and help. Don't go down and get in the way, for God's sakes. But, you know, and if those people just need to get away, you know, let's try to make sure if you got family and friends that need to get away from down there for a couple of days, give them a place to stay and feed them some warm home cooking. But, again, just keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Moving on to the next bit of business is our announcements for today. And this is Labor Day weekend here in we're filming a little late. Something that has already occurred is we had a gender reveal yesterday because my baby girl and her husband are expecting their first child, be my first grandchild. Oh! And it turns out it's going to be a little boy. His name's going to be Everest Kane. And we are really all tickled about that. We had a big turnout yesterday. Had a little bit of my family from Little Rock come up for it, a lot of Dylan's family. I want to give a shout out to some people. Dylan's mom and dad, David and Lori, provided the hamburgers and hot dogs yesterday and all the food. Might as well just say they did the food. David and Lori actually own Ivan's Meat Market over in Rogers, Arkansas. And y'all have the best meat in the country. So if you're needing something for your cookouts, please get over and see Dave and Lori. They'll get you hooked up with ribs or pork butts or kielbasas, whatever you need. You can always talk to them, too, about preparation techniques. They'll be glad to share that information with you. They want to. Those people that own those kind of shops, especially Dave and Lori, I mean, they want to sell you a good piece of meat, and then they want you to be happy with it. So ask them questions while you're in there. If you're not a seasoned smoker or a seasoned griller and you really don't know what to do, you know, they'll be more than happy to spend a little time with you and explain stuff to you and help you through that. So anyway, shout out to Dave and Lori. That's actually my son-in-law's mom and dad. And then a shout out to Mark and Di Miller, who is my son-in-law's aunt and uncle. They own the property where we held the gender reveal, which was cooler than shit. And I'm hoping my son's going to put a video of that on our website. Basically, Dylan shot a pumpkin because my daughter is into Thanksgiving or Halloween, Thanksgiving, fall type stuff, really big. So they packed a pumpkin full of tannerite and blue powder, and Dylan shot it with an AR-15 and exploded it. It was cool as shit. There was pumpkin parts went everywhere. But anyway, Mark and Diane Miller provided that the location. So a shout out to them. They are great people. Just so everybody knows, Ivins is not they don't sponsor this show. So when I'm saying that from my heart. You know, they are good people and they will treat you right over there at Ivins. They'll get you hooked up with some good stuff to barbecue. And then, and like I said, if you're not a seasoned barbecue or a seasoned smoker and you got some questions, they'll be glad to answer those for you and get you hooked up with what you need. Man, that is a big reveal for us here in the Bumpkin Bob family. Again, first grandchild. And it's kind of funny because we've got, on my dad's side, we've got three granddaughters, which was my two nieces and then my baby girl. And then we had a whole bunch of grandsons. So we got another grandson coming to the fold. This will be our great grandson, or my parents' great grandson, be my first. So interesting to see how this is all going to go. We are looking forward to meeting Everest Kane when he comes out. Very tickled over all this. And again, it was a great day. We had hamburgers and hot dogs and drank a lot of beer and blew some shit up. And it don't get no better than that, people, when you're in the Bumpkin Army. And, you know, we'll make sure we give a shout out to the Bumpkin Army and to the Bumpkin Bunnies. We're still going to press that. My son probably don't like that a little bit, but hey, we're going to press the Bumpkin Bunny thing. Hopefully we can get some t-shirts that say Bumpkin Bunnies, because I think that'd be cool as shit. Like I said before when I kind of started, this whole episode, not the whole episode, but the first little segment we're going to do and the last is going to be based pretty much on labor type stuff, or, you know, because it's Labor Day weekend. I've got another little segment that we're going to touch on. And to be honest with y'all, not sure how long today's shoot's going to actually go. Last thing I'm going to talk about is going to be pretty emotional and pretty much from my heart, and, you know, things go wrong as far as not being able to keep emotions in check. We may have to cut today's episode a little short. We're going to try not to, but I'm just pre-warning you a little bit. One thing I do want to touch on before I get into the episode or the segments that I really want to talk about today is we talked about a bill coming up before our Arkansas legislators about drug testing unemployment people. I haven't been able to find that. I've looked a couple of times. If somebody in our viewership can find what senator or congressman, state senator or congressman, has put that before the House this year, I found some stuff referring to it being put up there in like 2013. But the news the other day said it was back either in committee or in front of one of the houses or something. So if somebody can find that and shoot us a link to that, or you know, if you're following us on Twitter at Bumpkin Bob Show, help us out with that and give us some information so we can find out what senator or congressman is doing that. And we're going to get into some more political stuff in the second segment. As we move on today, you know, our whole part of our show is going to be based on doing job site tales. And the tale I decided to tell today is one that it's actually not funny. We're going to go more safety conscious today, and I'm going to make some comments. And again, you know, you can agree or disagree and hit us up on Twitter or on Facebook or in our email if you agree or disagree. But anyway, this is more about safety on the construction site and my personal opinion about some stuff. We were doing a job, basically, and I'm going to explain a little bit how building actually gets built, commercial type building. But we were doing a job that basically, I would say like half of the job, square footage wise, was just one story. And then the other half of the job was actually a two-story section, same building. So usually what happens in commercial buildings, they're usually basically what's called red iron construction. They have posts and beams, and the posts get set, beams get set, bar joists go between the beams, then they deck it with a metal decking, then your exterior metal stud walls go up so that they can sheath that and then they insulate the top of that metal decking, and then they carry a membrane up the sheathed walls to seal off the roof. So what happened on this particular building is they, on the one-story side, they set all the red iron posts, and then they put the beams between, all that's bolted together. Then they set all the bar joists across these beams. Then they tack weld them down. And then they come in and set their metal decking, roof decking, and they tack welded that down. Well, then they moved on to the second story part, the side that actually had two floors. So the one floor side was protected. Nobody's working overhead. So basically that way the metal stud guys could come in and get started on that end of the building. Because what happens is metal stud guys come in and work. And then once they get some walls up, the electricians and plumbers come in and start roughing in walls. Heating and air guys start roughing in their ceilings. And it just progresses on. Well, while they were doing the metal studs on the one floor side, our gang box was sitting down towards the end. It was still under what was decked. There was be no second floor on this area. But you could see that whole area out there. Again, there's no walls up yet, interior walls. They're only working on exterior walls so that they can get the roof dried in. And I want to say this before I do anything else. I'm not trying to knock steel workers, so don't hammer me on that. This is just a particular job and something that happened and just something I want other construction guys to be aware of. The steel workers on this particular job, they had set a bundle of bar joists between two beams down on the second floor end. They had busted those bundles, usually 10 or 12 bar joists, 8, 10, 12 bar joists in a bundle. They'd spread them out, but they hadn't tack welded them down because they didn't have the post and beam walls plumbed up yet. So after they had set these bar joists across these beams, they tried to plumb up the walls. Well, when they plumbed the one up, they pulled it completely out from underneath their bar joists. And that whole bundle of bar joists fell two floors down to the concrete slab. Well, it just so happened that I was standing at my gang box and the job superintendent was standing beside me when it happened. We saw the whole thing. Well, instead of approaching the iron workers and saying, or steel workers, whatever you want to call them, you know, and talking about safety issues, he hightailed it for his job trailer, and we didn't see him again till that afternoon. Well, about an hour later, basically the same thing happened again, and they dropped another bundle of bar joists. And I swear to God, in all the jobs I've ever been on, I've never seen them drop a bundle of bar joists. On this particular job, in the same day, within an hour, they dropped two. And it's like, oh my God. And the sad part, I don't know if it's the sad part, the thing that scares me the most is it was human error. It was not a mechanical malfunction. You would think that, well, maybe their SkyTrak malfunctioned and they dropped them while they were lifting them up, or they were lifting them with a crane and the crane malfunctioned and dropped them. No, it was human error. All in all, human error. Well, anyway, about an hour after that, I had walked back to my game box, and on this particular job, there was a brand new concrete subcontractor, their first big commercial job they'd ever done, that was on this job. Well, the guy that owns that company had sent two guys out there to do what they call grout the post in. And basically, all these posts are sitting below grade in basically a concrete hole with four bolts coming up, and then they're sitting on nuts, and then they set the post, and they set, tighten down four more nuts on top of them, and that's how they used to adjust them. Well, usually after all the red iron's up, all the bar joists are done, everything's plumb and square, and the roof decking is tacked down, they'll come out there and they'll pack non-shrinking cement underneath those, around the nuts and the bolts and underneath that plate that the actual beam or post is sitting on, and they call it grouting. Well, these guys were out there grouting. I mean, the steel wasn't even all stood yet, which I didn't understand anyway, but I looked out there, and one of these guys is literally laying on the concrete slab so he can reach down inside this about 18-inch deep hole and grout this post. He's got him a bucket of cement right there, and he's dipping it out, packing it under this post. Well, I stood there for a minute because he's working right under the steel workers. They're right above him, tacking bar joists down to beams with a welder. So I sat there for a minute until he kind of looked up, and I went, I just made a little finger action and told him to come here. He got up and walked over there, and I said, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not the job site superintendent. I'm not the safety official for the general contractor. I'm nothing. I'm an electrician. I'm just giving you some information that you probably need. And he's like, what's that? And I said, those guys working above you dropped two bundles of bar joists today within an hour of each other. If it was me, I would not be working underneath them. Now, you can do what you want. Well, he immediately got on the phone, called his boss, and his boss pulled them off and sent them somewhere else. He basically sent them out there because he didn't have really anything to do, and he was just trying to keep them busy, which I understand. But in a situation like that, safety has to come first. My personal opinion, and it doesn't always happen, believe me, my personal opinion, when the steel guys are on site, I don't think there should be another trade on. I don't think the metal stud guys ought to be there trying to get ahead of everybody, or, you know, the plumber ought to be there trying to hang stuff off the bar joists before walls get built. I mean, it turns into a race. My personal opinion is I think general contractors should tell their subs, if the steel workers have anybody on site, you're not allowed on site, period. It's like, just get them off the site, because they're going to be tempted to walk underneath them or do this. You know, well, we're just going to be digging out here, doing our underground outside the building. And then the next thing you know, they're over trying to do something underneath the steelworkers. It's like, to me, it's just not a good idea. You just ban everybody from the job site. But then this is what happens. the job is behind. You know, it rained and the dirt guys didn't get to work, or the concrete guys didn't get the slab poured. So next thing you know, they're over there swinging steel, and they're trying to get the metal stud guys in there. Either the general contractor's pushing them to get in there and get started, or they're trying to get in there and get started just because they need something to do. And to me, folks, it's a safety hazard. I mean, I honestly think, and I'm just noticing, my farmer's tan is crazy how white my upper arms are. It's just a safety issue. And to me, whether the job's behind or not, I think until the steel workers have the decking tacked down to the bar joists, I don't think there ought to be another trade on the job site. And that goes also to when the heating and air guys, you've got 18 or 19 big-ass air handlers up on the roof, and they show up one day with a crane, and they're swinging air handlers. And I'll be honest with you, in my 20 years working in the electrical trade, I've never seen them drop an air handler, but there's always a first. And it's like, to me, the safety is the issue. And it's like, you know, okay, we're scheduling for this day of the month. They're going to be swinging air handlers. There should be nobody else on the job. I don't care how far behind the fucking job is. You should put the safety of the workers first. And here's the funny thing about that. When a job's first getting started, and it's every general contractor, they're like, oh my God, safety conscious. You got to have your hard hat on. You got to have your safety glasses on. You got to have your either chartreuse colored vest or t-shirt on, or an orange colored vest or t-shirt on for high visibility. Or you got to have your leather work boots on. You got to have 3 inches of sleeve on your shirt. You got to have blue jeans on, or long pants, or overalls. You can't wear shorts until the job gets behind, and then everything goes out the fucking window. And it's like, we don't care if anybody gets hurt or killed. We got to make the deadline. And that's how it basically goes. To me, you know, general contractors should look back and they should look at jobs and go, okay, during this block of time when the steel workers are in here, there's going to be nobody in that building, nobody on that job site to get underneath them in case something does happen. And then also when the mechanical contractor is swinging air handlers above everybody's head, there should be nobody in that building. You can tell, and believe me, because I've seen it. Those guys can get there in the morning if they've got 20 air handlers to sell on the roof. They can get there in the morning, get set up, and they can have them all done in a day. Have them on their curbs where they need to be and done and the crane gone. And to me, the day they're doing that, the general contractor shouldn't allow anybody on the job site. Even if it, you know, electricians or metal, so, well, we're behind, we really been there working. General contractor should say no. You know, I'm not going to allow anybody in there. That's my personal opinion, and I'm sure it's not felt by other people, especially owners who want their buildings yesterday. They could give a shit less if a bunch of people get killed or hurt or maimed or injured. It doesn't matter. The point is, accidents happen, and if you're going to really be safety conscious, then you need to be safety conscious, and it doesn't need to be just at the first of the job. Again, when it gets down to the end of the job, you know, you spent, and the trades that see it the most are the electricians and the plumbers and the metal stud guys, because we're just about there the whole job. And it's like, first job, oh my God, you got to have a shirt with 3 inches of sleeve and long pants and leather boots. Then they get down to the job almost being finished, and the flooring guys will all show up wearing shorts, or the landscapers will show up and all have shorts and wife beater shirts, or whatever they call tank tops. I couldn't think of what they were called. Or the cleaning crew will show up in shorts and tennis shoes, and none of these guys have hard hats. Well, that's all right. You know, they're still hammering on us. Well, we got to get it done, and I can't afford to run them off the job because they don't have long pants on. And it's like, you know, you've been browbeating on me about safety stuff the whole job till it comes down to the end. And then you've got these trades, and it's mostly the flooring guys, because the electricians, the plumbers, metal stud guys, and the painters, they pretty well stay on top of it. But now sometimes they'll let the painter slash finisher slide. I've seen that before. When it's down pretty tight and they'll roll up with 20 finishers and they're all in tennis shoes and shorts and no hard hats, and they'll let them go in because they need it done. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh my God, safety went out the window because we need to get done. But it's usually the flooring guys and the landscapers. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm sure there is, and it'll come to me. Sometimes the door hardware guys that are there just putting in the door hardware. Now, not going there. I was going to say something about some people that put in door hardwares that I truly think a lot of. They know who I'm talking about. If they're watching this, you know who I'm talking about. Not talking about you two, because y'all always show up and have a good time and you're always dressed appropriately for commercial jobs, so I'm not including you in this. But there are just some trays that they let slide at the end of the job because they need it done. And it's like, again, you know, don't harp on safety on me when the job starts, when you're going to let safety go out the window at the end because you need the damn thing done. You know, that's just not right. You need to think about safety through the whole thing. And again, it goes back to the two big examples I have, the days that I'm most nervous. Number one, I don't work under the steel guys. That ain't going to fucking happen. I'll just tell you that right now. But number two is the day they're swinging air handlers. If they've got a bunch of them to swing, you know, if they could work it out and say, okay, from till noon, nobody worked from, you know, this column line east because they're going to set all those air handlers, nobody underneath them, you know, and actually carry that out. Don't let nobody over there. And then afternoon from that column line west, or however I did it, you know, that we're going to set the air handlers. That's fine. But, you know, be proactive about it. Again, guys out there that are working, you know, use your common sense. If 99.99999% of steel guys are safe, we just had that crew. Don't get me wrong. And because there's an electrical crew out there just as bad as they are. All I'm saying is, even if you've got a good crew, mechanical failure can happen. So don't work under the steel guys. Just don't do it. And if you can, if you're bossing the total ass, you know, or you're not so far behind that, I don't know, you're completely sinking, try not to be there the day they're going to set air handlers. Just tell your job superintendent, you know, or your boss should tell job superintendent, I need to know what day you're setting air handlers because I'm going to send my guys somewhere else. I don't want them working in the building. You know, because the day will come, if it hadn't already around this big country, that crane has a malfunction and they drop an air handler through the roof of a building. And it's like, and hurt somebody. So, I mean, that day is going to come. And it's better to have lost a day in production in the building than to get somebody hurt. And that's all I'm getting at. You know, let's just think about what we're actually doing out there. And now I've preached a lot about that because it's Labor Day and I worry about my fellow laborers, so to speak. So be safe out there. I mean, everybody's going to go back to work Tuesday and get back in the grind. So be safe and don't let your boss or anybody else make you do something stupid. If you don't feel safe doing it, don't do it. I don't care if you're the littlest guy on the job site or how big old boy you are, as the saying goes. If you don't feel safe doing it, don't do it for God's sakes. Be safe about it. All right, we're going to move on to something else that's been weighing on my mind this week, last couple weeks actually, and that's people wanting to know why we voted for Trump. I mean, you just hear it. It keeps going on and on and on. And I'm going to give you what I think of the reason why we voted for Trump. And I'm probably going to piss some people off when I say this, but that's all right because they probably need pissing off. But here's the God's honest truth in my opinion, the way I look at it. You have, on one hand, you've got your Congress, Senate, and whoever's president. I don't care who the president is, whether it was George W. or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or whoever. That's just who it is. Second off, you've got, or second hand, on the second hand, on the other hand, whatever, there's a golden band. Anyway, on the other hand, you've got all these special interest groups, all of them. And they're going to the House and the Senate and to the president, and they're going, we need this or we need that. We want this or we want that. And these are these special interest groups can be anywhere from one person to 1,000. But they're just small special interest groups. See what I'm saying? Anyway, they go up there and they whine about wanting this or they want that. Well, the first thing out of Congress's mind is, well, who's going to pay for it? And here's where I'm going to start pissing some people off. Probably. Because in my opinion, there's two special interest groups out here that they do not speak out. They don't talk. They just sit back and listen and take everything in. And the one I'm actually going to talk about is not the first one I'm going to mention. First special interest group is, here it comes, y'all, and you just got to be mad at me and get over it, which is what a lot of people need to do about a lot of things. But there's a group of people, and it's white males between the ages of 18 and 55. They have no rights. They have no say-so. And there's no special interest group at all that represents them. Okay? The other special interest group is a group of people that encompasses all races and both, because there's only two genders. And that's what I refer to as the working poor. These are the people that are out here struggling every day. They live paycheck to paycheck. You know, and it doesn't matter whether you're white, black, red, whatever, brown, you know who you are. You're either a single mom, single dad, divorced mom, divorced dad, or a mom and dad, or somebody that's never been married, but you're supporting a family on your paycheck and you're living paycheck to paycheck. And I'm telling you right now, and Congress up there, the whole bunch of them, can kiss my ass. Most of them probably don't have health insurance because they can't afford it. But anyway, this is the group we're talking about today, most specifically, is what I call the working poor. All these special interest groups go up there and they're like, we want this or we want that or we think you should do this or we think you should do that. First thing out of Congress's mouth is, well, who's going to pay for it? Well, every one of you son of a bitches in Congress, Senate, and the presidency, president, whatever, and the special interest group, the first people y'all point at is the working poor, is what I call. They'll pay for it. We'll just tax them a little more, or we'll give them an extra charge on this, or we'll up their property taxes, or we'll up this tax, or we'll make them pay more to to license their vehicle or will bump their income tax bracket up. It's always the working poor that you some bitches point out to pay for this shit. Well, I kind of view you, the special interest groups, as the schoolyard bully. You know, and here for the last 40 years, you've been just poking the little nerdy kid or the little fat kid, however you want to look at it, that's in the schoolyard, which is the working poor. You just been poking him. Pay for this, pay for that, taking his lunch money. And nobody wants to do nothing about it at all. So he turns around because we don't get media coverage. But as usual in the schoolyard bully, keeps poking, keeps poking, keeps poking. That little nerdy kid finally has enough of it and he socks you in the nose. Well, that's what elected Trump was. We socked you in the damn nose because we're tired of your shit. So we all voted for Trump. And that was our answer. That was our sock in your nose. Well, just like a schoolyard bully, and now I'm gonna liken, if that's the correct phrase, the mainstream media as being the principal. You've run to the principal and you're whining about it. Oh my God, he hit me in the nose. Oh my God. And they jumped on the fucking bandwagon. Yeah, little Johnny hit you in the nose. We'll have to do something about that. They're not looking back at the fact that you've been poking little Johnny for 40 years wanting to pay for your shit. And we got tired of it. That's all it is to it. And just so we could carry this a little further and let you know, part of that punch in the nose was electing a bunch of Republican congressmen and senators because they ran on the platform that they were going to back Trump. And then they got elected and special interest groups started padding their pockets and lobbyists started padding their pockets and they start crawfishing. Well, let me tell y'all something. We put you in there, we're going to take you right back out and put somebody else in there. All this big group of working poor that put Trump in the White House, we're tired of y'all not working with him. So we're going to vote you out and vote somebody else in. If they don't work with him, we're going to vote them out because we're tired of the shit. We're tired of being bullied. We're tired of having to pay for just shit that we could give a shit less about. Now, I'm sorry, and I know, you know, these special interest groups, we're 100 people that think we deserve whatever we think we deserve. And it's like, you know, we gotta have it, we gotta have it. And, you know, the masses don't give a shit. We really don't. And it's like, so quit your whining. We don't care if you have it. More power to you. Quit asking us to pay for it. That's what it comes down to. Y'all just keep going to the bank, and the damn bank is dry. We're tired of paying for your shit. We don't want to pay for it anymore. We want Trump to do away with Obamacare and go back to a regular insurance, insurance people also, we need to go back to either buy a 70-30, 80-20, or a 9-10 policy with a certain stop loss and you're done with it. All this shit out of network and copays and HMOs and BR5s and whatever other damn initials y'all can come up with is getting on people's fucking nerves. It's just, it's going nuts. Let me ask something real quick to one of my assistants and see if they can look this up for me, because it's something else I need to just blurt out there. What year did Katrina hit Louisiana? If anybody can tell me the actual year, I would like to know. And I mean, I want to know the actual year Katrina hit, not... Anyway, that being said, I'm sorry. We're going to move on. Now you know why I think we elected Trump. Because special interest groups and lobbies are like a bunch of schoolyard bullies. And the rest of the world is a little geek kid that was taking it. And we socked you in the nose. Now another thing, and I'm going to say this, and probably conservatives around the world are going to tell me to go to hell or want me to get killed. But here's the reason I wanted to know. I meant to look it up before we went on air. I am so tired of seeing the memes of President Trump and Barack Obama and what he was doing when Katrina hit. Well, people, Barack Obama was not the president when Katrina hit. If you're going to be an Obama basher, at least get your facts straight. Because when you do shit like that, you make the rest of us look stupid. Do you understand that? So before you post something on Facebook that's not correct, get your fucking facts straight. Okay? And you see what I'm saying? I mean, I didn't like Barack Obama either. I still don't. I never will. But I don't care what he was doing when Katrina hit, because he was the senator out of Illinois. He was not president of the United States. Do you understand that? Comprende? Okay. If it happened pre-08 or 09, actually, is when he probably took office, I don't want to hear this shit. Or 08. How does it work? Somebody tell me how it even fucking works. I'm not sure I know. Sorry for the nasty language. Now, I'm getting tired. My voice is getting tired. It's been a big weekend. But I want to talk about something, and I'm going to try to do this without making family mad, but I'm going to talk about something, and it's connected to Labor Day weekend, and it's something that's been heavy on my mind this week. And just bear with me as we try to get through this. I'm going to talk a little bit about my dad. And we're going to start out. This is going to be really weird how we're starting out and what we're talking about to get to another point. I mean, to another place. We're going to get to and talk about recognition for what somebody did over their lifetime, okay? But we're going to back into this really crazy. Just so everybody knows, as a little background, and we've talked about my dad on this show, me and my dad did not have a great relationship. When I was growing up, we didn't hunt and fish together. We didn't rope and chuck wagon race together. We didn't go dirt track racing, you know, have a dirt car and do that, or have a drag car and do that. I mean, it just didn't happen. That did not happen. We didn't have that kind of relationship. I seriously doubt that if my dad was still alive, he could tell you one Little League baseball team that I even played on. I mean, we just did not have that kind of relationship. And that relationship, for what it's worth, suffered as the years go by. And actually, you know, there about 8-9 years ago, when I was going through what was probably the lowest point of my life, And looking back, he was going through some things himself. So I don't want to put the blame completely on him, but there over about a 2-month period, I took a daily cussing from him. And I'll tell you right now, there's not another man on the face of this earth that's walking on two legs that I would have took that from. So anybody gets any idea that they can start calling Bumpkin Bob up and cussing him and calling him everything but a white boy is sadly mistaken, because you're not my dad and I won't put up with it. So anyway, that being said, I said that to establish the fact that in the 60s and 70s, you know, I was born in the early 60s and really grew up in the 70s. The definition of a father in that time versus the definition of a father in the 2000s is completely different, because in that era, you know, 1960, 1970, the definition of a good father was somebody that provided for his family. He worked. He went to work at whatever his time was, whether it was 6 a.m. or whenever. And it didn't matter what his job was back then, whether he was a janitor, custodian now, a lineman like he was, a rancher, a dog catcher, trash man. His job, what he did, didn't matter as long as he provided for his family. That, you know, and his family came first, you know, and you saw a lot in that day and time of fathers going without to provide for their family. So, you know, that the perception was a little different back then. We get to 2000s. Now the definition for a good father, you have to spend quality time with your child. And I'm not knocking that. It's just something that has progressed over the years. That's where it started. This is where it's at now. Who knows what it's going to be in 40 years, what the definition of a good father is. I got this feeling definition of good father in 40 years is going to be, you know, did you pick the right baby from the bottom of the test tube? Because that's where that shit's headed. It's not a crapshoot like it used to be. Anyway, that being said, you know, as a man that worked during the 70s, he sacrificed not only for his kids, because he was working and that's how he sacrificed. He sacrificed for the people of this state. And I'm talking about the state of Arkansas now, people, not, you know, not Texas or Louisiana or whatever, the state of Arkansas. He sacrificed for the people of this state. And I say that because, you know, because of what his job was. And he had started with Petty Jean Electric there out of Clinton, and then he went to Arkansas Electric as a line foreman. But all his years working with the electric co-ops, when there was a storm outage, and it could be anything from tornadoes to floods to ice and snow, he was either one of the guys in the bucket trucks or on the ground, or he was the guy at 2 o'clock in the morning in the office arranging this stuff. I can remember as a kid going to Harrison, Arkansas to spend the weekend with an aunt and uncle, Uncle Jack and Aunt Millie. And it started snowing, and by God, at 10 o'clock at night, we went back to Little Rock because he knew he needed to be in the office. He needed to be manning the phones. And if there was a co-op in the state of Arkansas that needed help, he was the one that was going to coordinate and get people sent to him, and he would go. I mean, it wasn't just sending people around to do things he wouldn't do himself, because he would do them himself. So he sacrificed for the people of this state. Now, bear with me. I'm getting somewhere. He had the reputation with his people. I mean, the men that worked under him and with him and beside him, I should say just worked beside him and with him, because he didn't consider them working under him. I mean, they were peers to him, no matter what his position was. These men were peers, and they put in a day's work, and he respected them for that, and they respected him. And I swear to God, there's most of those men that worked with him or for him, however you want to look at it, would, you know, if there was 10 feet of snow on the ground and ice and the wind blowing, they'd be on the pole right beside him trying to get power back on because they just respected him that much. But when he passed away, there wasn't a single one of them son of bitches showed up at his funeral. Now, you can't tell me that they were all dead because they weren't. You know, and it's like, that really bothers me. Now, I'm going to exclude a group of people that I usually refer to as the Parks Boys because, number one, every one of them was at Dad's funeral. And almost, if not every one of them, and they know who I'm talking about, almost, if not every one of them, worked for Dad at some point. And now those boys, who are my cousins, respected him for the job he did. And they knew what kind of job he did. And they were at his funeral. So when they were also kin folks. I mean, they were kin. He was their uncle. And they all thought the world of him. So, I mean, I'm excluding them from that group of people. I'm talking about the guys that worked for him. You know, they weren't there. Now, my Uncle Kent, his younger brother, also worked for him. And Kent was there. I want to exclude him from that group too. But he did not get, as far as I know, any recognition in the Rural Arkansas Magazine or the Arkansas Democrat or any other publication for that matter. And it's funny because, not funny, funny, sad. He retired in 97 or 98 from the electric co-ops. In and around 04, I think it's about 04, we were doing a cafeteria, a new cafeteria, ground up building for a private school here in Northwest Arkansas, which happened to be in Carroll Electric's territory. Well, we had gotten specs from Carroll Electric on, you know, what they required for their primary conduits and what they required for their transformer pad, and which we had done. Well, a field engineer came out to inspect that, you know, make sure we'd done everything right. And he introduced himself to me, and I wish I could remember the man's name. I do not know it, but I introduced myself, and he's like, "Do you know a Bob Griggs that used to work for Arkansas Electric Co-ops?" And I'm like, "Yes, sir, he's my dad." And he's like, "Well, I want to shake your hand." I said, "You do?" He's like, "I don't know if you know this or realize it, but your dad's responsible for lighting up most of this country." And I kind of chuckled to myself because I knew it. I mean, and something else that leads towards that, and it's not just up here. It's pretty much statewide. We would be driving along, going somewhere, and he didn't say I. He never said I. He always said we, because he included the people that worked with him in his accomplishments. It wasn't an I thing. It was a we thing. It was always we. But he was like, "We built this 15 miles of distribution line right here for Woodruff Electric," and he usually knew when, and blah, blah, blah. "Or we built this 40 miles of transmission line for this electric co-op," and "or we built this substation for First Electric Co-op in 1980, and then he would tell a little bit of the background about it. And that was all over the state. These places were all over the state. Now, don't get me wrong. Since he retired, there's been more distribution lines, more substations. It's all still been built. It was being built before he got there. But, you know, you just have to look at that slice of time there, and it's a big slice of time. From 1966 to 1997 that he worked for Arkansas Electric. And it's like, and before that he worked for Petigen Electric, but when he worked for Petigen Electric, he was a serviceman and that kind of, you know, he was coming up, getting started. And he didn't have the effect on the whole state that he had once he went to work for Arkansas Electric. And it's like people that quietly do their job and have done things like that don't get recognition. Now, Bill that's been down here racing at the whatever speed track for 20 years, you know, and he's won it three or four times, won their track championship. Oh, my God, he'll get so much recognition, it'll make you want to shit in your drawers. But somebody that literally built, and I would think it would be in the hundreds of millions, but millions and millions of dollars worth of distribution and transmission lines and substations around this state doesn't get any credit for it. Not a lick. Not a lick. I mean, and, you know, you'll have people. And I know nothing about the chuck wagon races over at Clinton. But I guarantee you, whoever wins chuck wagon races or whatever, I don't know if they have different categories or whatever. But whoever wins whatever the top category is will get more recognition for that than he got for his time at Arkansas Electric. And I think that's pretty sad. I mean, it's pretty sad the way everything goes. Now, that being said, try not to get too emotional. You know, my dad was my hero. But not because he team roped or he golfed or played baseball or because he took me hunting and fishing, because we really didn't. I mean, I know sometime before we left Clinton he really liked to bird hunt. He bird hunted a lot. He never bird hunted after we left Clinton. He also liked to fly fish or wanted to. It's not that he liked to fly fish. He wanted to get into fly fishing. He just never did. He didn't have time. He worked all the time. I mean, that's just how it was, you know, and again, by today's standards, he was not a good father. By 1970 standards, he was, you know, so that being said, it's like, yeah, me and him didn't get along, didn't have the greatest relationship in the world. The only thing we could talk about was electricity, and that's pretty bad. I mean, me and him never discussed girlfriends or, I mean, everyday life stuff, problems with the wives, problems with whatever, problems with kids. We never talked about that stuff. The only thing we ever talked about was electricity, you know, and it's like that's probably pretty bad. That being said, because of what he did, what I know in my heart he did for the state of Arkansas, whether anybody else knows it and whether anybody else wants to admit it, because I guarantee you, the turnover at Arkansas Electric over the last few years is just, it's phenomenal. And most of those people probably don't even know who Bobby Dean Griggs was, you know, and that's pretty sad too. But, you know, I know in my heart there's a field engineer for Carroll Electric that knows, and I'm sure there's other people in the state of Arkansas that he dealt with on a daily, I don't know how to say that exactly. They also know, you know, and they do. I know that, well, there's some other things I could say I'm not even going to go into. I thought about it, and then I decided it's better that I didn't. Anyway, on this Labor Day, you know, me personally, I want to thank Bobby Griggs for his contributions to REA in the state of Arkansas. Whether anybody else realizes it or knows what he actually did or didn't do, I don't care. It's my little Labor Day thank you out to somebody that sacrificed family time to do his job for the state of Arkansas. Because I guarantee you, when the chips were down, he was there. I mean, that's bottom line. And I have to say, that's a better man than me, because I tell y'all to get fucked. Because I'm the type of person that knows every one of you son of a bitches, when the power's out, you're griping, but when somebody gets it back on, you forget about them. And it's like, I don't give a shit. I'm the same way on the commercial job. I mean, I realize today that whatever I do today, you're going to forget about tomorrow and find something to bitch about. And that's why, you know, I have a hard time doing extra stuff for job superintendents and the owners. It's like, because they're not appreciative of it. You know, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Well, I hadn't beat your ass. How's that for what I have done for you lately? So anyway, let's recap. I'm not exactly sure where we're at on time. But like I said, I'm getting a little hoarse. Let's recap what we talked about. Again, do not forget about Texas in your prayers and thoughts. If you can give to the Red Cross or another charitable organization, please, God, make sure it's a legitimate organization. And also, just so that everybody's aware, and God love you people in Texas, but when the water goes down, the unscrupulous contractors are going to be your next flood. And please, God, please, 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 do not give these people money unless you got a contract and you know them or you know who they are. Just, I guarantee you in the next months, because it happened after Katrina, we're going to hear horror stories of these people going down and taking advantage of those people in Texas. So please, God, to the state officials down there, keep your eyes and ears open and try to keep that to a bare minimum. And you unscrupulous contractors that are going to go down there and take advantage of those people, there's a special place in hell for y'all. That's what I want to tell you right up front. Anyway, we had the gender reveal. I'm going to be a grandpa. Woohoo! And we're waiting for little Everest Kane to arrive. If you're on a job site and you don't feel safe, don't do it. Tell your boss to get fucked. Tell him Bumpkin Bob said you could. We're going to keep punching people in the nose as the collective working poor until we get some shit changed. Stay together, people. Don't let them break us apart. Stay firm. And then, you know, recognize people for their daily jobs. And, you know, let's keep each other in your thoughts and prayers. And this is the Bumpkin, and I am out.